The world's largest energy project is underway in Alberta, Canada. Petroleum is being excavated from vast tar sands and will likely be shipped to the United States by way of a recently proposed and opposed pipeline. We're joined now by journalist Andrew Nikifork, who helps us examine the ecological and economic impact of developing oil sands. Hello, Andrew. Thanks for coming on.
Hi there, Mike.
In the media, the deposits are called oil sands or tar sands. What exactly are they?
Well, what it really is, it's a low-grade hydrocarbon that is technically called bitumen or bitumen, and what it is it's this very thick molasses-like hydrocarbon trapped in sand and clay, and otherwise known as heavy oil, really, really heavy oil, and it takes a phenomenal amount of brute force to get it out of the ground. And then it has to be upgraded, and then it needs very complex refining. So this is not light oil. This is a signal that the age of cheap oil has ended, and now we're into the very expensive and dirty stuff.
And is it the case that we have developed better extraction technology, or is it the case that the price of oil is so high that we can now pay the high cost of extracting this bitumen?
Well, it's because the price of oil is now so high that we can economically justify digging up an area the size of Rhode Island to find petroleum, and that's essentially what we're doing. What's really interesting about this project, it has actually set a new marginal price for world oil. Bitumen, because it is so energy intensive and so capital intensive, is among the world's most expensive hydrocarbon. In fact, it's even more expensive than getting deep oil offshore from the Gulf of Mexico or from the Arctic, let's say. And because it needs about a $60 to $80 a barrel on world oil prices to justify its extraction. And because Canada now exports about 1.6 million barrels a day, almost all to the United States right now, this project has really driven up the price of oil right around the world.
U.S. gets more of its oil from Canada than it does from anywhere else, right?
That's correct. You get 20% of your oil now from Canada, and about half of that is coming directly from the tar sands.
And the deposit of oil has been described as the biggest deposit of any kind of oil outside of Saudi Arabia. How big is it?
Well, it's huge. I mean, the resource itself lies under the ground in an area about the size of Florida. But Venezuela has bitumen deposits in the Orinoco Basin that are virtually on the same size and scale as those in Canada. And the difference between us and the stuff in the Middle East is that the stuff in the Middle East is much cheaper and easier to get at, although it comes with all kinds of political compromises. But that's the big fundamental difference.
Yeah, I think it was, I saw a quote here that Bill McKibben, the environmental activist, said to Wired, the Saudi Arabian liquor store is running out of bottles. Do we sober up or do we find another liquor store full of really crappy booze to break into? You know, maybe you could argue that wouldn't you rather go to a liquor store in a much safer part of town, which is what Canada is, as opposed to what Saudi Arabia represents, which is all those political complications we were talking about.
That's true. I think what Americans forget, though, is they don't forget Saudi Arabia started off as a friendly liquor store that actually, American companies set up. And the really interesting thing here is that oil money over time tends to really bend and undermine even democratic governments and even the friendliest of folks. There's been really no discussion in Canada about what we do with this money, and there's been virtually no discussion in the United States about how much can you really drain your economy on buying foreign oil, whether it's bloody oil or whether it's dirty oil from Canada. I mean, the United States now spends $1 billion a day on importing oil. That's a huge drain on the U.S. economy.
Extracting it, how deep is it? What are they talking about? What needs to be done to the environment in order to get at it?
Well, there are two ways to produce bitumen in northern Alberta, and one is simply open pit mining, And so we now have about 700 square miles of open pit mines that eventually will cover an area of 2,000 square miles, or roughly an area of Rhode Island or Delaware. So that's what we're digging up.
Mm-hmm.
We're digging up to a depth of 40 meters. All right, so we're changing the hydrology, everything about this landscape. So it's essentially sacrificed landscape. And so that's one form of production. The other form of production is actually dirtier in the sense that it's spread over a much bigger area and takes enormous amounts of energy and enormous amounts of CO2 production to produce. So this is where you're using natural gas to heat up water, to turn it into steam, and then you're injecting the steam into very deep deposits, melting the bitumen, bringing it back up to surface. That is really extraordinarily energy return, energy intensive. And the CO2 emissions from that are 3 to 4 times higher than the mining projects.
To the point where a NASA climatologist, James Hansen, says that if development of the tar sands project is allowed to go forward, it's essentially game over for climate change. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think it depends on sort of what context Jim Hansen is saying this. If we exploit the tar sands and it becomes a signal to other countries and other companies that, well, you know what, guys, you better go after your dirty oil and your oil shale and your tar sands in the United States, then it is game over.
Mm-hmm.
If there are limits placed on bitumen production. And one certainly hopes that at some point there will be, but then it's a different story. But I respect Hansen as a scientist, and when you have a fellow like that and also a grandfather sort of standing up and saying, you know what, this is the wrong direction for us to go as a country, I think it behooves Americans to listen to a man like that.
Has there been public polling? Are Canadians in favor of this?
Well, Canadians are, we're a natural resource developer. So, we love cutting down trees and digging up uranium or gold or nickel or whatever it is and then putting in the global marketplace. And I think it would be fair to say that Canadians are divided on this project. I think some Canadians think it's a great source of income and jobs, and others are embarrassed by the fact that it is a large source of carbon emissions. And it really is a crude form of open pit mining, and a whole bunch of other folks recognize that. Look, that this is not a sustainable project at all. This is what you do when you've run out of cheap stuff and you don't have Plan B in order yet.
I'm Mike Peskin for Leonard Lopate, speaking with journalist Andrew Nikifork about so-called tar sand mining. What about the Copenhagen conference? Doesn't Canada have certain targets to reduce its carbon emissions? If they go forward with this, will that blow through all those targets?
Yes, I think every study I've seen here in Canada indicates that the Canadian government will not be able to meet any of its targets, and the solution that we've chosen is probably the most uneconomic, most costly imaginable, and that will have the least effect, and that's burying carbon underground, we've blown all of our climate change targets as we have for nearly 10 years now.
Tell me about the pipeline that the Obama administration is considering, Keystone XL pipeline.
The Keystone XL pipeline is a $7 billion project that would take bitumen from northern Alberta all the way down to refineries on the Gulf Coast, particularly in the Houston area and also on to Louisiana. And TransCanada and Canadian government officials have said, look, this is a great deal for the United States. This will improve U.S. energy security. And that is false. It will not do that. The pipeline is really about finding another market for bitumen because the U.S. Midwest market is now saturated. And they really want to get this bitumen on supertankers in the coast and off to China or to Europe. So this project has nothing to do with energy security for the United States. The other issue that Americans really haven't debated about and haven't thought about is that, the demand for oil in the United States is going down. It's not increasing. And this has to do with a number of factors, new automobile emission standards, new ethanol standards, as well as the economic recession. Countries with shrinking economies do not spend more on energy. So, again, that all of these are indications that this pipeline is really not about supplying U.S. need at all. It is simply about building a huge project across the United States in order to find ports for a product that is having difficulty finding a market.
Though, you know, you just said a declining economy is not in the position to be buying more oil. One of the reasons the economy is declining is because of the labor situation. So what about the jobs picture? I mean, would this at least be a good jobs project?
Well, it would be a very temporary jobs project. I mean, pipelines, employ folks for very short periods of time, and I think we're looking at probably less than 20,000 folks. And I think a lot of people in the Midwest would object to this kind of job creation project because they're building the pipeline over, you know, America's largest aquifer, the Ogallala, and they're more worried about water security than they are job security.
Well, can you compare the area in Alberta and the amount of energy or oil we might eventually get from the tar sands to what the controversy is in the ANWR, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge? Is there more oil to be had in ANWR than in Alberta? And is it more costly and more environmentally impactful in one or the other?
Well, there's tons more oil in the bitumen deposits of northern Alberta than there are in ANWR. There's about 100 years worth of oil in northern Alberta, provided you can afford it, right? And there's only about 3 to 6 years supply of oil in ANWR, and so the United States has got some critical changes to make in the years ahead. I mean, how much do you want to continue running on oil? How much do you want to change your economy? And how much of your economy can you actually change? Because almost every decision you make is going to involve some kind of sacrifice of one kind or another. So, I mean, these are really big decisions for the states to make. Right now, the U.S. Midwest is running on bitumen. I mean, 70% of the market in the U.S. Midwest is that's all oil coming from Canada. What you need, I think, is given the high price of this stuff and also its dirty character, is that you need a plan, a 10 to 20 year plan, that really reduces oil demand in the United States in innovative and creative ways, that is somehow tied in with a new project to revive the American dream.
If you watch the Republican debates, they're still saying drill, baby, drill. Quickly, do you have any sense of what the Obama administration is thinking about this proposal? Where we stand politically?
Well, I can say that drill, baby, drill is not gonna solve your woes. I mean, all the oil that is left is extremely capital intensive, right? So it's not gonna employ a hell of a lot of people. It's gonna take enormous amounts of money, and the energy returns from all of these projects will be diminishing over time. So the United States really needs something smarter and a lot more clever than that. And one of the interesting things is that you've already increased drilling in the United States dramatically over the last 5 years. And so you've got a lot of oil coming on stream in places from North Dakota. And
right.
The more bitumen you bring into the country, you're going to price that stuff out. So, is that smart to do?
We have been speaking with journalist Andrew Nitifork. He is the author of Tar Sands, Dirty Oil and the Future of the Continent. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mike.
On tomorrow's show, Fawaz Jurjez explains why he thinks the increase in homegrown terrorism in the West is a sign that Al-Qaeda's influence is on the decline. Then, master caricaturist Drew Friedman with his tribute to the Borscht Belt, even more old Jewish comedians. Also, playwright Itamar Moses on his new drama, Completeness. Plus, this week's Please Explain is all about common sense. Why sometimes it isn't even sensible. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Keith Karn, Jessica Miller, and Sarah Waltuck. Debbie Fountain and Mayan Levinson were at the audio controls. I'm Mike Pesca in for Leonard Lopate. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.